Cindy Brown and Ray Bader. Welcome.
Thank you, and good morning.
Morning.
It's a lovely Monday morning. We're supposed to have sunshine, I'm hoping. We first wanted to brag a little bit. We have two awards we just recently received from the state of Ohio in regard to our agency and the work that we're doing. The first one, Ray, you're going to come up and hold them up. Actually, take them up if you can. The first one's the best overall performance in metro agencies. That's the same agencies in the state of Ohio that have the same caseloads as our agency. And the second one is outstanding performance in paternity establishment. We're really proud of these awards, and we couldn't do it without our whole agency. It takes more than two people. We have 92 full-time employees at this time, approximately 30,000 cases, 23,000 of those cases being enforcement. Those are the cases that we have to really work on to get the funds in for the children. Our caseload numbers steadily increase and have been over the years. We're still waiting to see on the repeals of the Deficit Reduction Act. That's the one that kicked us to the curb financially in 2005. We have two repeals that are pending right now. One is the Senate Bill 803 and one is the House Bill 1386. And until that time, we are going to continue as an agency to be as frugal as possible in our spending. At the end of 2007, our collections were up by a whopping $655,000 over that of last year. And today we continue to be way ahead of those collection numbers from last year. This shows diligence and hard work on all the parts of every employee at CSEA. And we're real proud of our agency. Ray's license suspension blitz in 2007 was a great success, and which also brought in additional child support monies. Last year it was pizza boxes, if you remember. And this year we hope that it's going to be water bottles, something that won't bring out the guys in the black and the purple camouflage pants in front of our government building. So although we'll be taking a kinder, gentler approach with our water bottle idea, we continue to be aggressive in our efforts regarding the most egregious cases, such as the Scottie Cooper case we just had. I don't know if all of you saw that in the paper. This gentleman has eight kids and he owes over 82,000 cases, and he's now sitting, I think he's still at Middletown right now. So we take that very seriously. In fact, I think all of you know I'm very passionate about my job, and so passionate that I called into Nancy Grace about a week ago on a case with an NBA star who had 10 kids in eight different states with eight different women. So we continue to be aggressive in that area. This year we will also be initiating a program. It's called Children of Absent Parents. And what this will do, it will give those children who are experiencing an absent parent from the home a voice in the system. We've partnered with Children's Services, Adult Probation, Community Behavioral Health Services, and the Hamilton City School District, and plan on putting the wheels in motion for this program in the following school year, which will be this fall 2008-2009 school year. In January of this year, I attended the National Child Support Enforcement Association 2008 Policy Forum and Training Conference, try saying that three times real fast, on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. I visited the offices of Congressman John Boehner, Congressman Steve Shabbat, Congresswoman Jean Schmidt, as well as attending a breakfast with Senator Sherrod Brown, no relation, to discuss those repeals that were affecting us from the repeal or the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005. Barring any unexpected funding cuts, CSEA expects our collections to continue to increase, not only in the year of 2008, but for many years to follow. Last but not least, Ray and I would like to support all of you for the support that you have shown us over the years and continue to show us. This helps us to provide the best possible service for the community and for our county and Butler County.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy.
Do you have any questions?
The awards.
Thank you.
Marvelous. It speaks highly of your entire staff, of course.
Thank you, and thank you for your support. We really do appreciate it.
Anything else you have?
Nothing. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Ray.
Oh, yes, we wanted a photo op, and we didn't know if now would be the time or if we wanted to do it later. I wanted to be the rose among the thorns, all the guys.
Your choice.
Yeah, let's go there.
we got one. It worked.
Oh, yeah, the film does.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hey, at least it worked the first time.
You guys broke the camera.
That's what it is. Ray? Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Mr. Ron Porter, TID. Good to see you, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Although I've had a number of occasions to be before the board in the past, this is my first opportunity to talk to you folks about TID business as a director of the TID. So I welcome the opportunity and thank you very much. Today we wanted to talk about Bypass 4 and how we have that project organized for funding. And I have some information to pass out.
Thanks, Ron.
Okay, thanks, Ron.
As you know, we've been very busy here in the last 6 months since I started in October of 2007. We've already had a number of accomplishments that we've made. Three out of the four phases of the Liberty Interchange are now on their way. Cox Road Extension is under construction, should be completed in the fall of 2008. Hamilton Mason Road East from I-75 to Butler Warren Road should be finished in the fall of 2008. The interchange project itself was just led by ODOT. In the last couple of weeks, a $14.7 million project, all financed by the Butler County TIF and Liberty Township TIFs and JEDs. That project should begin construction in May, early May, with a completion date of the summer of 2010. The fourth and final phase would be Hamilton Mason West, which is bounded on Cincinnati-Dayton Road on the west end and I-75 interchange on the east end. That we expect to have out for bids in the spring of 2009 with a completion date of the fall of 2009. With the opportunity to, if we need extra time, the summer of 2009, because it has to be completed before the interchange is done. That's a caveat on that. But also in that same 6 months period, we were also trying to reorganize our effort on Bypass 4, which, as you know, has been divided into phases. However, it was never constructively put together for funding in the phases, and the engineering had to be divided into phases as well. We took the environmental assessment aspect out of that and let that run on its own as one separate project. Then each of the remaining phases of the project, the engineering on that will be carried separately, which will allow us to recover all of the $1.2 million that TRAC has dedicated for engineering. Otherwise, we would have been leaving a little bit of that money on the table using the other method. Phase one, if I can just give you a quick recap, phase one is at the Hamilton Mason Road intersection, and that is being administered by the Butler County Engineer, with Fairfield Township being the lead local agency on that one. They have a grant from OKI for, I think, $2.2 million on that. Phase four is on the south end. That's the city of Fairfield. They're carrying that project entirely. Phase two and three, which are the topics of today's discussion, are ones that we have applied to OKI for funds. OKI only opens the opportunity to get funds through their TIP, their Transportation Improvement Plan, every 2 years. So this is very important. The deadline was last Friday. We did get the application submitted. However, we do have a week or so window to get additional supporting documentation in and added to that application. So although we're a little bit late on getting that done, we still have a chance to get that information in there. So if I can run down through the sheets that I gave you real quickly on exhibit number 2, page 1. This is deals with bypass for phase 2, which is at the Sims Road intersection. With construction management right-of-way and utilities, we have a total estimate there of $6,775,000. We do have an existing $2,950,000 grant from Federal Highway Safety. And then there's associated match money to that project, to that fund. ODOT is putting in 10%, which will be about $368,000. So that would leave a balance then for the locals to pay, the difference between the 2.9 and the 368 taken from the $6,775,000 gives us a $3,456,000 shortfall, which the locals would have to make up. Our strategy was to apply to OKI for STP funds for that amount. And then we move to the bottom part of the page where we show that under the approved highway safety grant column, we have $3,318,000 in funds available through that. Leaves a remaining balance of $3,456,000. We're going to request $2,765,000 from OKI, which would leave us with a local share of $691,000. On page 2 is any questions on phase 2 at Sims?
Ron, if that was divided up between the three jurisdictions and...
I have a page on that one.
Okay.
And the next spreadsheet shows the breakdown on bypass for phase 3, which is the portion from that fills in the gap between Sims Road and Hamilton Mason Road. Now that takes in a new bridge over the railroad. It includes the upgrading of the intersection of Tylersville Road, and it also includes the curb cut for the extension of Bob Meyer Road, which would eventually go to the airport. All of the elements of that project add up to $13 million. The maximum grant that you can get from OKI on any given year, and in this case, year 2013, is $8 million. We still need $5 million to carry that on a local share basis. Now, if we'll move to the next sheet. Page 3, I'll show you, that shows you how we were going to plan on breaking down the expenses on those. Under the phase 3 column, you'll see a total of $3,604,000. That's because the ODOT share is, that's not exactly been pinned down, so we've added a little bit more to that. But anyway, all those figures add up to how we want to break that down. Now we used the OKI grant at $5 million, considering the worst case scenario. We've requested $8 million, but taking a worst case scenario, if we only got $5 million, then we still have to come up with $8 million on our own. So our strategy for doing that was looking at state capital improvement loans, SCIP loans. $1,286,600 for 2 years in a row of SCIP money. And then borrowing $5.5 million gives us enough money to build the project. Now, if we get more than $5 million out of the grant from OKI, then this number would come down. If you look at sheet 4, that breaks down the actual spread over 20 years of what it takes to borrow the money. The columns on the left-hand side represent borrowing $5.5 million at 5.5% for 20 years. The columns on the right-hand side of the page represent what it costs to borrow the money for the 2 years of skip loan, $1,286,000. Each year it comes up to $2,573,000. We would apply for skip loans at a 0%, so that's just a straight repayment of the principal. The gray column on the far right-hand side represents a total payment annually for that 20 years. It comes up to $598,000. Now, if you look back at page 3 for just a moment, at the bottom of the page is where we have divided this up. And after having a couple of meetings with the stakeholders regarding this project, it seemed to be reasonable and fair that we would divide the expenses relative to the local shares in 3/3. So if we divide that by $600,000 annual debt payment by 3, then we come up with $200,000 a year to pay for this. Now, nobody wants to borrow money for 20 years. Obviously, that's a long time. But considering the circumstances and the dire need of the project and how long it's been going on without some clear direction and having a good firm commitment from the locals as to furnishing the local shares, we felt that this was the best case scenario to try to move the project forward. Now, since it actually won't get underway until federal funding year 2013, which in real time is July 2012. That's as soon as you'd be able to get at the money. That still gives us plenty of time to work on other strategies for coming up with the money. I've included in your package draft resolution and also a letter of support. Open for questions.
Ron, you want to tell us a little bit about Fairfield City? They're not in this mix, but why they're not in the mix and how they're paying for their end, and they're letting us use that as a credit to us.
Okay. The phase four, the city of Fairfield last year decided to take that project on their own and go forward with it. They're paying for that with 100% city funds. Now, their project starts at Route 4 South and runs north along on the bypass to just north of Port Union Road. I think their current estimate is somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 million. Now, that's just for construction. That doesn't include engineering money and right-of-way money and other issues and utility issues that might be there.
And they let us. And they're allowing us to use their payment as part of our match, right?
Yes, we have a letter in place from Mike Flynn, former director of Division 8, indicating that in his interpretation, the money being spent by the city of Fairfield could be used as local share for the future on projects. Now, we still have to get that approved by Federal Highway, which we will certainly make that attempt and see no reason why it shouldn't be approved. Now, one thing you have to be careful of, though, is that credit money isn't real money. So if you've already maxed out how much you can get from OKI, which is our $8 million cap, if you say, okay, we're going to use credit money for the $5 million, there's still no dollars there to actually build it, you see. So credit works in other scenarios, but not in this particular case.
And based on what we think is going to happen, that there's going to be more highway dollars allocated to the total highway systems, we've got 5 years before this actually would be in effect. So right. There may be other opportunities out there that we could use that credit and for other projects and be some other funding sources for this also.
That's correct. It's my understanding that the governor's proposed stimulus package includes $400 million that he wants to add into the Ohio Public Works Commission, which would go directly then to these SCIP funds. And
then the last scenario would be that there's quite a bit of undeveloped property along that corridor. Now, for instance, if one of those major pieces develops, then they will actually be required to contribute monies towards these road improvements out there, which should put some money.
That could be worked into their development plan, yes. As they go through their various approval processes through the levels, different levels of government, county, city, or township, those elements could be put in place, yes.
We were talking at first real preliminary numbers once of $3 million, I think, on mm-hmm. one project that was going to be developed. They would be required to put right. into that development
right.
towards this. So there are some opportunities to
Right. And I think we have some time to work on that and cultivate those other opportunities.
But the worst case scenario, I think, as you gave us, was if we don't do anything and we just had to write the check and borrow the money, it's $600,000 a year divided by three for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The $1 million for right-of-way, you know, when I look at the highway, it looks like it's wide enough that wouldn't need to buy any right-of-way. Where is that coming from?
In most cases, you're correct. When that highway was originally designed in the early or mid-60s, they built two lanes of it on a four-lane right-of-way. So it's approximately 200 feet wide. Now, with the advent of this super street design, which is going to be slightly larger in width than a conventional intersection, at least on the main line, will require some additional rights of way and some impact on the side streets. So in order to have some money budgeted for right of way, and certainly that's expensive real estate down there, I put that money in there just as a safety net so we'd have something. It's easier to ask for it on the front end than it is to come back and ask for it after the fact.
That was my next question about the roundabout, that or the super street, whatever it's called. That's a reality. That's going to, you know,
yes,
we're not going to get.
ODOT has given us pretty clear direction that's what they want. There was some vacillation early on about whether or not we should or shouldn't do it, and I finally got somebody from ODOT to say, yes, that's what's going to happen. We're going to require it.
Yep.
So we've established that. We're moving on.
And I think we just approved someone to go up to Michigan to look at the super streets. Was that you or was that somebody from
ODOT? Well, I've been working with ODOT to try to get a group of people to go up and look at that using ODOT's airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
We'll have more than one intersection with the super street. Do they want that on? Don't they want that on Tylersville?
Sorry?
Too? Don't they want the super street designed on Tylersville too?
They're still kind of holding that open as an option. As of right now, it's a conventional intersection. It wouldn't surprise me if they come in at an 11th hour change and say we want it to be a super street. So we're preparing for that. We have not actually started the detailed plans yet because the environmental is still a month or two away from being completed. We can't start the detailed plans until then. Now, one of the arguments that they have about using the super streets on the bypass, and there's going to be one at Hamilton Mason, and there's going to be one at Sims Road, that you have to be consistent. In other words, if you're going to use that type of an intersection in one area, then for consistency reasons, you want that to be the same formula each time. Now, I think that makes sense. And in reality, although they're a strange-looking thing to us because we've never actually seen one in this area, they do use a little bit less right-of-way on the side streets because they don't have to be as many lanes as they would on a conventional intersection because of the left turn lanes are now gone. Everything's a right turn lane, you see.
Seems like there'd be an aerial film of how that would work that we could take a look at and also publicize to the community.
We're having a kind of a beta session with the Greater Hamilton Chamber of Commerce on May the 2nd out at the engineer's office. And we have an animation that shows how the thing works. And we also have some aerial photos from the location in North Carolina that shows what it looks like on the ground, and some details showing the turning movements. The big concern, of course, in the commercial community is, can our trucks get through it? So we have a detail that shows the turning movements going through this and how the trailers track through this, so that make sure that the geometry of the intersection works for the people who have to use it. So that's on May the 2nd. You're more than welcome.
Thank you.
On your question, Don, you were talking about is that assessment type arrangement as opposed to the TIF?
You mean on how we can get the funding for that? Well, I think it all depends. There's a number of ways we can do that. We're working it through the county engineer's office, and it can go through the TIF. And also, there's going to be a JED. There will be a JED generating some money up there also. So there's
the development out there, the potential is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, Menards announced this weekend, I guess, that they're going in that area, not up on Hamilton Mason, but, you know, I assume that knowing the engineer's office as well as I know it, they're going to have, when they do their traffic study, there's going to be some dollars allocated to that, too. So that one of those will help.
The traffic impact study done by a proposed developer is going to have some influence on that as well, yes.
Yeah, so each one of those is going to help.
And that's required. I'm sorry, Tim, I can't hear you.
I didn't have my microphone on.
Okay.
When we split it one-third, the other participants are the City of Hamilton and Fairfield Township. Is that correct?
That's correct. The City of Hamilton has already submitted their resolution, and Fairfield Township, I'm meeting with them tomorrow night. It's my understanding that they're in full support.
So
we have a resolution part of communication, so why don't we pull it out and vote on it separately if it's at your desire. Yes.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks.
It's past 9:45, time for public hearing for Children's Hospital bond financing.
All right, we need a motion to reopen the public hearing.
Move to reopen the public hearing.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Good morning, Commissioners. Brad Rui with Peck, Schaefer, and Williams. We're here this morning on behalf of Children's Hospital as a follow-up to the public hearing from last week. Before you, for your consideration, is a resolution which would authorize the issuance of tax-exempt revenue bonds for the benefit of Children's Hospital. And just to give you kind of a brief recap, the bonds would be a variable rate issue of bonds, so they would be backed by a letter of credit. It would not in any way implicate any of the taxing powers or full faith and credit of the county. The county would receive indemnification not only for payment of principal and interest, but also for any casualty liability, really everything. To give you a little refresher on the background, why these bonds, why Children's Hospital is going through this process, in 2006, they issued auction rate bonds. They actually issued two series of bonds in 2006, one for the Liberty Township property and the other for property located in Hamilton County, which was for the construction of a parking garage. It is the parking garage bonds, which are actually the auction rate bonds. The other bonds were fixed rate bonds and seemed to be just fine. But auction rate bonds, as you may have heard, are backed by bond insurance. And bond insurers have had a tough time lately. A number of bond insurers have either invested in subprime-type securities, or they have actually backed those types of securities. And because of the defaults surrounding subprime-type lending, bond insurers, many of them, have had rating downgrades. And that is, in fact, the case with the Children's Hospital's 2006 L bonds. FGIC, FGIC, was the bond insurer, and they have basically been downgraded to the point where they're out of investment grade ratings by all of the rating agencies. That translates into a much higher interest rate on the bonds, not just a little, but a significant increase in the interest rate that Children's Hospital is paying on those bonds. The hospital took some initiative, and they've actually refunded those bonds with a taxable series, a taxable note, essentially, from Fifth Third Bank. And what they're seeking to do is take that taxable note and now refund that with a tax-exempt series of bonds, which would give them an interest rate which is more in line with what they're accustomed to having, that is, a tax-exempt rate. The resolution before you this morning would allow the hospital to accomplish that. Hamilton County, last Wednesday, the 16th, passed a resolution which gave their approval for this project. Their approval is necessary because, again, the property is located within Hamilton County. For the purposes, though, of keeping some consistency with the documentation, as well as having Butler County essentially refund a Butler County series of bonds, that is why Children's Hospital is before the county, asking them to issue what essentially amounts to a refunding series of bonds.
No.
Chuck, anybody here to speak for or against?
Yeah. Anyone present wish to speak for or against the Children's Hospital bond financing issue? Anyone present wish to speak for or against this issue of the Children's Hospital bond financing?
Move to close the public hearing.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
We now have a resolution determining the necessity of authorizing issuance of sale of aggregate bonds not to exceed $53 million in behalf or on behalf of Cincinnati Children's Hospital.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes. Thank you, Brian. Go to communications, please.
Certainly. The commissioners are asked to approve the minutes from the April 17, 2008 meeting. Next, under travel and training, we have the following submitted for your approval. Tippi Slaughter, Nancy Piper, Board of Elections, Seminar, Ohio Election Law, $1,500. Robert Clevenger, Juvenile Court, for the Ohio Urban Juvenile Court Administrators Association, Columbus, Ohio, $250. Donna Everson, Community Development, for the Spring Quarterly Meeting in Columbus, $415. Darren Rhodes, Sheriff's Office, for Dual Purpose Narcotic Dog Training, Denver, Indiana, $7,316. Gina Marshall, Kevin Loving, Lisa McIntosh, Renee Osichuk, Scott Couch, from Job and Family Services, to attend the Directors Association Conference in Columbus, Ohio, $3,630. Amber Brown, Christine Compton from Building and Zoning to attend the Excella User Conference, total $4,731. Next, under finance, we have resolution increasing non-general funds budgets, $40,000 for the insurance fund for employee assistance program, some reclassifications and additional monies in the title fund to cover unemployment comp, some dollars in Fund 881, which is a grant fund, to cover to reclass out of excess out of workers' comp, and finally under the juvenile rehab fund, Fund 910, it's a reclass of excess workers' comp to unemployment compensation account. The next resolution for a bond issuance, we're pulling that one from the resolution or from the communications. This deals with the CCAO bonding pool that I would like to get some more information on as to what has the progress been to date on the bond pool, who has borrowed, and some more information on the reason for submitting an amendment. So that resolution is pulled. Next, under Job and Family Services, we have a contract to approve a child care contract with Faith Community Missionary Church in the amount of $250,000. It's for a term until March 31, 2009. Next, under Job and Family Service, submitted for your approval, is an amendment to an existing contract with Community Behavioral Health. The existing contract basically provided parenting skills pregnant women and mothers with infants. The scope of the project is being expanded to include toddlers and older children to engage other different level of people involved with the parenting training. Next, under Job and Family Services, we have a renewal of a contract with University Moving and Storage. It's for packing and moving services in instances where Adult Protective Services has made an assessment and needs some quick response as far as moving elderly people. Under the engineer is submitting a contract with SK Construction for approval, contract 2008-2 for bridge replacement at the Morgan Ross Road Bridge. And the amount of the contract is $486,537. Under miscellaneous, the board is requested to allow the advertisement for bids for the West Terminal area, phase three, for the development of aprons, taxiways, and terminal access points. Next, for your approval or request, is a to advertise for bids for furniture for the administration building at Princeton Road. Next is under miscellaneous, you're requested to approve a contract for the Butler County Sheriff's Office with SRI Dry Cleaners in the amount of $79,975. Finally, the board is requested to reappoint and appoint a new representative to the Public Defender Commission. Tim Williams shall be appointed for a term 2008 to 2011. Ray Pater, beginning his term in 2006 and continuing till December 31, 2009. Gary Yates is a new appointee, shall begin his term and expire December 31, 2009.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet.
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon.
Yes.
Commissioner Furman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, we've talked about going out for RFP for request for proposals for a company to give us assistance in reorganizing our social services, children's services, CSEA, that all that whole organization. Can we do that by resolution and give us the assistance in both personnel and policies to help us reorganize those departments as we talked about previously? Get that on the road?
I'll second that if that was a motion.
Yeah, kind of.
Did you kind of second?
Well, kind of second.
I guess the proper wording would be an RFP for company's assistance for reorganizing county offices and personnel and policies.
Certainly, we have a resolution requested to look at the organizational structure and the process flow for children's services in conjunction with reviewing it with the merging of Job and Family Services and any other agencies that, you know, might be applicable related to merge or related to it. We have a motion out that has been moved by Commissioner Dixon, seconded by Commissioner Jolivet. Okay. So we'll call the roll. Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
I have something I wanted to bring up, and it's about a future meeting that I'd like to have a presentation in front of the board. The commission some time ago, 2 years ago, voiced support in a resolution supporting the Child Advocacy Centers, the Center for Family Solutions. Since that time, there's been a great number of people have been working on this project, and we're at a critical juncture with regards to the project, and I'd like to be able to come to the committee, come to the board, and give an update, and to give and hopefully receive a reaffirmation of the project. And as I look at the schedule, I was hoping that May 1st would be a good time to do that for about a 15 or 20 minute presentation by the committee in order to get the commission's reaffirmation about the project and give you details on how this project's moving forward and how it is really going to be able to save the county and different agencies over $1 million a year, which is based on information we received from the National Child Advocacy Centers. So with that, I'd like to be able to get on the schedule to be able to make a presentation to you.
Can we get some communication also, Greg, sure, from some of the other areas that this is
certainly
in place? And
certainly. There's, you know, there's the one that I visited and up in Columbus, which is about our, you know, it's a large county, serves Columbus and Franklin County, which is very impressive. And another one that's closer is the Meyerson Center down in Cincinnati Children's Hospital, and also Warren County opened one, which is a much smaller operation based on the amount of cases, the small amount of cases that they receive. So there's a number of examples, and you know, I like to wait till May 1st to give you that presentation, but this is I think so important as to how we make a change in how we deliver services and prosecution of those people who abuse children and children who are witness domestic violence, that it's so important, because right now the system is kind of fragmented, where a family and a victim have to go to four or five different locations in order to tell their stories, tell it over again. The child becomes traumatized. The services that are available are all over the county, which leads to families giving up and not following through. In this instance, in this project, would bring these services to one location so the families who are in need of these services can access it without having to try to traverse the county and trying to find the services. And as I said, there is a savings to all the agencies, and also a higher, which is the studies will show, a higher prosecution rate in order to get the offending person punished. The one statistic that I've found and just sticks in my head is that one out of every three person who is abused becomes an abuser later on in life, and that is something that we have to change. And so this is a step in that direction in order to make sure that the victim receives the counseling and the healing treatment, but also the families, because the families are also the victims, whether it's a spouse or boyfriend or whoever is the perpetrator. The families go through just as much trauma and victimization as the young child. So I think it's a very worthwhile project, and I'm excited about being able to present what the county or what this committee has done and the progress that we've made. But we do need, we're at a critical juncture when it comes to raising capitals, that we need to make sure that we have the county's reaffirmation.
Have you you still need to be on the agenda?
Yeah, well, not if you want to. I'll make a motion, I think it's important that you get the full feel.
I think what Commissioner Furman had brought up is a good point. You know, if you expect us to come in here in May the 1st and give us 15 minutes and pass a resolution, you know, that's probably not going to happen, right?
Oh, no. I'm not. Okay. I think it's a...
we need those. If you can give us much stuff, as you can give us in advance, the better.
Okay.
And I'm interested in... I think it's a worthwhile project. Needed numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Show us the numbers.
Sure.
Show us how much... How we're going to pay for it.
What I was interested in also is the law enforcement support. Made some comment
The county's...
The prosecutor's office and all that. So.
The county's involvement with the numbers wouldn't be until 2010 at the earliest.
Okay.
And it's based on being able to raise money in the community in order to do the capital.
Well, I know you put a lot of time and effort, and you'll be commended for that.
I think it's very worthwhile, and it's desperately needed in our community. We're only seeing higher and higher cases.
Well, I've seen firsthand that repeated situation where the abuse becomes, as they get older, the same. It's just a pattern.
Yep.
And so if we could break that, obviously, that's it's a great, great thing. Anyone in the audience have anything?
I have a question.
Ron?
I have a very difficult time hearing Mr. Dixon make his motion. I guess this gentleman rephrased it. So I just want to ask, has that got something to do with your study to see how many employees we need in children's service?
Yes, that's correct. That would include how we structure the whole agency and look at everything, and it'd be maybe structured completely different. And also it's going to address the personnel needs. And if we got too many personnel, how do we get to where we need to be? And maybe we don't have enough in one area and too many in the other, and it's going to look at that kind of, all those issues. It's going to encompass all that. It'd be jobs and family services, it'd be children's services, it'd be CSEA, workforce, I think anything that's related to that social service group.
I think, Ron, what he was referring to is some possibilities of cross-training. There's any number of things that we need to look at as potential. It's been discussed, so is that correct?
Okay. Move to adjourn.
Second.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.